The Elite Series is back. The fifth stop of the season happens this week. We just wrapped up the fourth event of the Opens year. That and more on episode 177 of the Inside Bassmaster podcast. I'm your host, as usual, Ronnie Moore. My co-host, like always, Kyle Jesse. And Kyle, we aren't doing back-to-back elites, but we do have an open going to an elite, and then we're going to about to have about a month break from the two top levels of Bassmaster. And so we've got some offshore fishing to come with the post-spawn aspect of these last couple events and the future couple events, but it's going to be a good stretch. Logan Martin was absolutely fantastic for the open last week, and now we head to Lake Murray, one of the most highly anticipated lakes on the schedule again this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned it. I mean, really, regardless of what tournament series we're talking about, whether it be the college, high school, nation, kayak, and then obviously the opens and the elites that you just mentioned, this is kind of the turning point of the season, you know, as far as the year is concerned. You know, the tournaments are still, generally speaking, in the south, southeast, and you know, this is the time of the year where the fishing shifts a little bit. We see far more offshore fishing, far less, you know, not necessarily bank fishing, but bed fishing, spawning fish. You know, we started to see that a little bit at Logan Martin for the St. Croix Bassmaster Open there just last week. But obviously, a tremendous playing field at Lake Murray, one of the best lakes in the country, without a question. So much variety, big largemouth. They're usually hungry, eating blueback herrings. It is a really, really fun lake and should be a outstanding tournament. And to your credit there, it feels weird for it to not be a back-to-back. It's like when you look at the schedule, this seems like almost kind of the tournament on an island almost in a way, where, you know, you had two back-to-backs to start the season, then this tournament. And then although the Alabama swing is not back-to-back, you know, they're obviously within 3 weeks apart of each other, just an hour and a half difference, or not even that much, an hour difference of drive. So yeah, this is kind of the tournament on an island. I'm sure for a lot of guys, it'll be a step in the right direction. And then a lot of guys, it could be a challenge for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And this is the time of the year, like you said, where is that transition? And when we have an event that has the shad spawn, some sight fish, you know now that that's going away. The season is actually changing when you start to see some of those deals happen. And this is kind of the time of the year where I stop worrying about water temperature. I do not care what it's always the fan question is, well, what's the water temperature at the lake they're fishing? All we need to tell you is it's no longer spawn dependent. It is now, that means it's going to be warm, above 65, 70 degrees, and it's trending in the direction where you're not, I need a downsize because the water temps dropped a degree or two. No, it's they're through some of the crucial time periods where they're more affected by weather and water temperatures. And now it's, you're going to be getting into more stable conditions, and it's going to generally be rising over the next few weeks and months temperature wise. So they're only going to be progressing to being, you know, to their summer stages. And so we just had shad spawn in Florida. But we also had shad spawn at Logan Martin Lake in Alabama for the open just a few days ago. And then obviously Lake Murray last year in April, we started having spawn, shad spawn, herring spawn, all those three things were Venn diagram over each other. And now this year we're going to be about a month later, maybe 3 weeks later than it was last time. And so some of those things may be going by the wayside. There may still be sight fish to be caught, but we may not see anybody in the top 10 of the tournament catching sight fish. Like it might be some guys caught a key one to fill their limit, but it's never going to be the first, second place person doing it, things like that possibly. But those other things, the shad spawn could be a little stronger than it was. If that's not the case and it's fading, then the herring spawn will be stronger than it was. And so that's what I love about this. There, everything is spawning. And so if the bass aren't spawning, they're feeding on something that's spawning. And so it's you can just keep going where you're in that same depth zone. But let's revisit Logan Martin real quick. We just did. You came in the studio and did Bassmaster Live. Kudos to Kyle Jesse for making, not his debut, because you were on Bassmaster Live with Dave Mercer a few weeks ago in the Florida swing, but it was your debut to the studio and full-time hosting for the day. So I appreciate you coming into Logan Martin and doing that for the open. What were your takeaways watching it on this side of the camera and how it went down, especially with how many fish we saw get caught?
Yeah, it was unique in a lot of perspectives, you know, especially considering I had worked at JM behind the scenes. So I understood the flow of the day and all the things that go into making live a reality. So that was not a shock because I've seen that before. But, you know, seeing it from the perspective of delivering, you know, what's going on throughout the day, I want to say it was hard or anything, but it really wasn't. I mean, you made it super easy on us. Mike Breedlove, obviously being the producer, did an outstanding job. You and Mike obviously carried the show and made it super easy for Buddy and I, but it was a lot of fun to be able to see it. You know, that's something you and I have talked about on the podcast a lot is, and you know, Buddy even mentioned it as well. When you're watching live all day long, and I do this when I produce for the website. Like if I don't go to an elite, which I usually might not go to like one or two a year sometimes.
But for sure, like opens as well.
Yeah, opens 100%. Like when you get to sit there and watch live all day, you see such a wider realm of what's going on. You know, like when I'm on the water shooting photos, covering the event in person, you get a much more narrow view of what's happening. Because, you know, you're only covering a handful of guys per event, you know, by the time you get to the third, you know, second, third, fourth day, you're narrowed in on your targets and kind of who you're covering. So, it's not so much that you have a feel for everything that's going on as where you just kind of know what like a few guys are doing. But when you get to watch it from the perspective of live, and especially when you're paying as close attention as you have to be on the set of live, it really gives you an idea of like what everybody's doing. And it really gets your mind thinking just as a fisherman, like, you know, all the things that are going on, all the things that could possibly happen later in the day and things of that nature. And it just keeps you so engaged. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it because like I said, especially with the elites, I don't get the chance to do that very often. And even the opens, I go to a lot of the opens. So that is a very unique perspective. And I told you before we even started the podcast, what you guys do there at JM is by no means easy at all. You hosting the show, Tommy, obviously, I think we can all agree we take Tommy for granted how good he is at hosting the show as well and how easy he makes it. But and, you know, I'd put you right in that same ballpark for just making it look easy. I don't know, like it's maybe second nature to you guys because you do it so often. But like being the outsider coming in and doing it, it makes you understand that it's not just as you know, as easy as open your eyes and just do it. Like there's a lot of things that go into it. So obviously have a tremendous amount of respect for everybody there in studio at JM, but even more so now, if that's even possible.
Yeah, I just remember, not that you guys were spiraling out, but it was probably unsolicited advice. But after like the first two segments, the first 30 minutes of the show, I looked over at y'all and it was like, we were all like we were a little bit out of breath. And I was like, hey, just know we've gone angler to angler and package to package and winner and this event recap and this and that. And then what's next? You just, if you ever feel like you're getting too sped up, just breathe and just slow yourself down. Just realize we have plenty to go to and we can just ease into it. And so that's always, I'm like, you're in the middle of like, I got to go from one thing to the next. And then when you get to the commercial break, you're like, okay, this is going to be a valuable 3 minutes of just, we're yeah. not going to say anything. And we're just going to like, we'll get to the next thing. But also it is different. If you were taking photos of Josh Butler on the final day, you would have been like, man, that was a good morning, but man, he's got nothing going for him midday. And boy, that was a good 10 minute flurry there. And when should I leave? And you're looking at Bass Track and you're like, these guys are catching him. Do I run all the way 20 miles back down? Is it going to be really worth it? You know, and those kinds of things. And we see how many fish and the action that was nonstop for a lot of the other anglers. Yet Josh's two windows of flurries were the windows that got him the victory, and he still won by a comfortable margin, but for a little while it wasn't too comfortable.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that you said it and I started laughing when you said it, but like if you were on the water covering that tournament and you were just checking Bass Track, you're like, oh my gosh, like he's not gonna win this thing. Like he's not even gonna, like he's letting it slip away from him there in the middle part of the day. But when you're watching on live, you get the feeling that like you're understanding what's going on. You know that the current's coming. You know that things are going to happen later in the day. But when you're on the water and you're watching it, like, you know, we interact with the anglers a decent bit, but not enough to the point where you're like in their head basically as to like what exactly they're doing, compared to where like on live, obviously when you're watching and paying attention that way, you kind of know that like, although he seemed frustrated at times and you could tell he was a little like almost upset that they weren't biting as well as they were in the middle part of the day. You're like, well, as soon as that current starts or as soon as like that afternoon bite window hits, he's going to be fine because he's had like his slowest morning of the tournament so far, and he's still got a decent lead. But yeah, if you were watching on the, you know, if you were covering on the water, you'd be so tempted just to bounce because you're like, one of these guys is going to win it. And like, we're not going to be down there covering him. But yeah, it's certainly different in that perspective, no doubt.
Yeah. And even for Josh, it's one of those things where, you know, expectation, but fear, like they're going to turn on the water and I'm going to catch him. It's going to be A-okay. This is the perfect plan. It's going to work out. I'm going to catch five real quick on shad spawn. That's going to carry me till they turn on the water. But then there's that fear of like, well, they said it's going to be 1 o'clock. And what if there's something wrong and they don't run it till 2 or 2:30? Like, we're checked in. Like, it doesn't matter then if they run it. And so I think he even caught a 3-pounder while the siren was going off, announcing that they were about to start sending some water. And so it's like, yeah. And he goes through his 6 to 10 bites in 30 minutes. And you're like, yep, he was just creating drama. Let it get jump out to a 9-pound lead because he had a quick morning. Let everybody reel him in. It gets within a 0.5 pound. Somebody takes the lead and boom, I'm going to just take it right back and, you know, easily win. So kudos to him. A big week for him. He jumps into the Classic now for next year with that victory. Jumps into the top 9 in the Tackle Warehouse EQ points race for the St. Croix Bassmaster Open. So he is now inside the elite qualification line. If we just stopped doing opens the rest of the year, he would be one who would make the elite series. So it's pretty cool when you see anglers' dreams come true and their goals. 50% of his goals are done halfway through the year. Now I'm on pace to do the other one. I got to keep it going. And so very cool for Josh Butler to do that. We were talking about this. Obviously, we saw Kiyoya Fujita, his best friend, Yui Aoki. Those two were in the top 10. But another two guys who were younger, Tucker Smith and Emil Wagner, both did very well. And we were chatting this right after the weigh-in ended. And I said, man, Tucker beat Kiyoya by just a few ounces. So he ended up, you know, being the highest finisher other than Josh Butler. He got second place. And I said, we got to have Tucker on the podcast at some point because he has 2 second-place finishes in opens that would have punched his ticket to a classic. And he's got 2 second-place finishes in the college classic bracket, which would have punched his ticket to the classic. I mean, if anyone who's been through some highs and lows, his mentor, Aaron Martins, is the guy who's known for those heartbreaking second-place finishes. So he probably has had plenty of stories with Aaron to know the highs and lows of bass fishing, but man, that kid is so good at catching bass and he almost did it at home that, you know, that breakthrough's coming. But how brutal is that to have 4 second-place opportunities in events that would get you to the classic? That is a track record. We haven't probably seen this early in someone's career. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it's easier to say than, like, to do in practice if you're Tucker. But, like, his time's coming. I think we all agree with that. Like,
he's already won way more than most guys have in college right. levels. And he won $1 million tournament. But, yes, you're like, I need to win the right ones. Yes.
Yeah, for the sake of the classic, like, you give yourself that many opportunities.
I gotta win the
like,
right ones, yes.
It's going to happen. And
he would probably give up a first in the college championship and get second or third if it meant first in the bracket, like, you know, swap them. And most everybody would. That's not a hard thing. But winning a national championship is no light task. And so you're asking someone to give up something that you've probably dreamed of. But then college bass created this funnel to get to the classic. And now it's everyone's dreams to win a championship, but really their dream is to win the bracket. If they didn't win the championship but got close, that's fine. I still got another big goal that's even better up ahead, you know?
People stay up at night thinking about winning the bracket, not, you know, not the championship. And that's, like you said, that's no disrespect to the championship because it is incredibly hard to win against the best competition there is in the college series. And but yeah, I mean, the thing that keeps individual anglers up at night is the thought of winning the bracket and fishing the classic. So like I said, his time's coming. I have no doubt about that. Keeps giving himself opportunities. And you know, if he keeps catching the way he is and he qualifies for the elites, then he'll have a chance every year. So we'll see how it goes out.
So I think we'll just revisit this real quick before moving on. I think Evan Kung, Dakota Ebert, Easton Fothergill, Cody Meyer, Matt Adams, and Bobby Bakewell were in the top 9 coming into the event, and they're still in the top 9. And so that would be Kyle Jesse. You were correct. You were correct on so many fronts this week. big kudos to you. You said six would stay, three would leave. That was the case. You also said that you were wrong. We were both wrong that Dakota would take the AOI. Evan Kung held on tight to that and extended it by probably, you know, doubled it. He was around 10 or I think 13 or 15 points, and now it's 33 points. You were right about
Kyle Austin
having a big week. Yes, he was just outside the top 10 in points, but he got a top 10 in the event. What, he moved from like 22nd or something to 11th, 25th?
23rd, I think, is what he was. Yes. And then he moved all the way up to what, 12th? Is he 12th right now?
11th.
11th. I'm
he's
sorry.
Actually,
yeah,
he's actually 11. one point. When he was fifth on Bass Track, he was tied for 10th with Bo, and he would get the hat, you know, the nod for tiebreaker. So he's 1 point out of the top 10, and he would be 3 points out of the top nine. So right there where he needs to be. Super glad we mentioned him. Ty Faber, super glad to see he hung in tight there in Alabama. He's 12th. And then Tucker Smith obviously jumping up to 13th. My guy Trevor McKinney, time to shave the mustache because I picked you to have a great event, and he did not. But he only dropped from 10th to 17th. So still right there, but I expected him to be up into like 4th. So shave the stash, Trevor. Shave the stash. Awesome. Well, four events are in the books for the Opens. We're about to have five events in the books for the Elites. We head to Lake Murray. I'm a Carolinian. I'm a North Carolinian, but a lot of the lakes, a lot of the styles of fishing translate well, and blueback herring. There's only a few places in the country that have lakes that have blueback herring that would even give you kind of like a understanding of how these lakes fish similar, fish different. You know, all those Savannah River lakes when you have Hartwell, Clarks Hill, Russell, those lakes. You have Lanier, then you have Smith Lake, you have Lake Murray. Is that it?
I'm thinking of some more, but Kiowee, does Kiowee have?
Yeah, Kiowee, because that's above Hartwell, so they're on the same chain, yeah. That whole Savannah River chain there has them. And I think every single one of those lakes is a largemouth spotted bass lake, where spotted bass are often the fish that is used to win. I'd say that Clarks Hill is still holding out as largemouth. Hartwell has been for a while, but we saw an open one on all spotted bass. But Murray, Lake Murray this week, blueback herring, but 99.9% of the bass that live in the lake are largemouth. They may have some spots dumped in from other lakes, swam down the river, who knows how they got there, but not actually thriving and multiplying on the lake. Dominated by largemouth, exclusively largemouth for the most part that you're going to be targeting. And that's what makes it a lot different. But Lake Murray, we mentioned it, it's like the Lake Champlain of the South, the land of a bunch of bites at times, really quality fish as your average fish. You may not have a 9-10 pounder, but you're going to have a bunch of 4-5 pounders. And that's what you want for a great tournament fishery. And it's starting to get pressured as much as like a Lake Gunnersville would be. I mean, there was huge tournaments the last 2 or 3 weeks there, and these fish get conditioned very well, yet they're still instinctually driven by eating blueback herring. Where those blueback herring go, those bass will go as well. And so we'll see them maybe on the ends of the points, ready to go this week in the first week of May at Lake Murray.
Yeah, I think that'll be the biggest thing. And obviously, Lake Murray, the last time around in 2023, you mentioned it, obviously, a lot more at play in that event than we will likely see this go around. As you mentioned, less spawning fish, most likely, way more of a herring spawn, blue, or, you know, shad spawn, things of that nature, should lend itself, in my opinion, at least, to the guys that know a lot about herring lakes. Now, you know, you could kind of get away from that the last time we were there in 23 with the amount of fish that were still in the bank, still spawning, lingering around. I can even remember John Cox potentially. I want to say the last day he caught some off bluegill beds even. I mean, it was like kind of all over the place, but you'd have to think the population of bass on the bank, especially spawning, I wouldn't say on the bank just in total, but spawning will be less. And in my mind, it just seems like it's going to tailor to the guys, the Carolinians, the guys that have a lot of experience fishing the blueback herring lakes. Which for the sake of fantasy fishing makes it difficult because it's like there's only so many of those guys, and everybody knows them. Our audience and our fans and players of fantasy fishing are just as knowledgeable as we are, and
load up on them.
And they do. And that's what makes it a little tricky. But it's crazy to think that nobody that, you know, outside of the realm of our Carolinians are going to do well. So there's going to be some surprises along the way, like there is every single tournament.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And that's what the big dilemma is when we get to fantasy fishing. I talked to my guy, Lucas Murphy, you know, former college angler at Grand Valley State in Michigan. He now lives at Lake Murray, works for Strike King. And we were talking about all the things you'd expect to play. You know, you could still see a dock bite for sure. Cause like we said, when there's all those other spawns, bluegill spawn, shad spawn, fisher, basser and post spawn mode, the ends of docks, rather than maybe where we saw the walkways and right up along the bank on the docks for hunter shrike play, we may see towards the ends of docks, which means you can cover a lot more water quickly because you can go the end of dock to end of dock and maybe just throw a pass down the dock and not have to go all the way up to the walkway and then come and present your bait and then go back around. And so I mean, we may see some stuff play like that. Drew Benton obviously winning on spawning fish last year, but I really said that final, we made like a show called the most important catches of the year. And it was the best catch or the most important catch for each champion. And kind of like we did with Jeff Gustafson. Jeff Gustafson's most important fish was the first smallmouth that he caught during the Classic last year, because that was telling him, hey, I can do this. The same thing can be said for Drew Benton. He caught a 5 and a 6 spawning on the final day to help win. But I said his most important fish was his limit filling fish off a shad spawn that final morning. It got him up to around 22 pounds, and he was able to spend the rest of his day because he had great weight. You would weigh in 22 pounds and be okay with it. But because he had like 21, 22 pounds off a shad spawn, he was able to spend the rest of the day looking for big spawning fish, and he caught 2 or 3 of them and culled up some, but he wouldn't have had that opportunity if he was still trying to fill a limit with good weight throughout the day. He was able to really go put his trolling motor down and, you know, use his forward-facing eyeballs to find spawning fish that he needed at the end of the day. And so that was key. And so I think we'll see some of that. I don't think the river's going to factor for 4 days. I don't think you can probably win out of the river compared to the lake. I think that this place, when you think about styles of fishing, I felt like in April if you had 30 spots, you needed to narrow it down to like 4. Here's 4 places I'm going to revisit, because Brian knew, we saw him day 1 last year. Everybody was picking him because he had just moved to Murray. He is not a Murray guy back then. He's a Lake Wylie guy, Lake Norman guy. Murray is just a different animal. And so when you think about it, I don't even think I mentioned Lake Norman. I think they have some blueback herring in there, but it's not too tremendously. So anyways, let me go back to that. Lake Murray, not being his home lake, it's one of those places you can run and gun a ton. We've seen that in the Forestwood Cups in the summer, hitting spot and spot, spot, go, go, go. First cast, if you don't catch anything, keep running. Kind of like the Tennessee River in the heyday. You pull up on a school, if you don't catch one, keep going. They're biting somewhere. And that messed him up because I felt like it was a 4 or 5 spot deal you needed to have, not a 30 spot deal. As we get into May, as we get into June, July, August, that can start to be more of a thing. But like Lucas was talking about with me on the phone, it is going to be one of those things where if you do have 4 or 5 places and you don't want to run around too much, when they're not actively feeding or schooling on blueback herring, you could see some dragon baits come into play. You could see a drop shot or a jig, and those things still get bit big time on herring lakes. When those fish aren't actively feeding upwards, they're going to go and sag off the points, off the sides, off the ends, and you can pick up an individual big fish. You know, let's just say you catch a limit as they're schooling, you could have 15 to 20 pounds, but you could catch a 5-pounder sagged off by itself. You might not catch 5 fives when they're schooling, but you can catch a 5, you know, off the side of the point, off the end of the point as you pick through that school. So we'll see how patience versus run and gun come into play. And that'll really determine, it kind of was impacting my fantasy fishing, you know, outlook, picking a different team of trying to picture who could run and gun well and keep that within, you know, a controllable deal, or who's going to be patient and stick to a, I'm going to dumb this down and I'm just going to find two or three places. So when that brings us to Rapala Bassmaster Fantasy Fishing, my big question before we get into individual picks is going to be the B&W Trailer Hitchers question of the day, all right? And before I lay it out, want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by B&W Trailer Hitches. If you're in the need for a reliable hitch, look no further than the Tow and Stow adjustable ball. Heavy duty, adjustable in height, multiple options, and it stows right behind your truck when you're not towing. That is a game changer, especially for your shins and especially for the way it looks. Having it be adjustable, sleek in design, that's exactly what you want from your trailer hitch. So if you're towing RVs, you're towing your boat, you're towing your work trailer, consider B&W Trailer Hitches when you go and purchase a brand new hitch. So, Kyle, the B&W Trailer Hitches question of the day is going to be, how many high percentage guys are you comfortable with on your fantasy team? Out of the five-man team, how many? Because there is quite a few guys that are those Carolina guys, those Herring guys, 25, 30, 40%. How many guys is your limit on picking it? Because we have the opportunity this week to have go overboard. And kind of a segue, second question, what's the highest percentage you're comfortable with picking? We've seen Lee Livesey at Fork with 75%. We've seen Chris Zaldane before at 56%. We've seen Cliff Prince at the St. John's River at 60%. What's a percentage that's almost makes you wince a little bit on picking them?
Excuse me. I would say, to answer the first part of the question, typically I like, my formula is one or two high percentage guys. Two is typically the max. Typically is not Lake Murray on the second week of May, because this week my roster does not reflect that. I have several high percentage guys. Again, we can get more into that as well, but typically I like two guys. Two guys high percentage will do it for me if they're the right guys. If they're the, you know, the type of guy that I'm like pretty certain will catch them, which gets me to the second part of the question. I don't really have a you know, too high of a percentage. I think that if a guy is like a drop dead, like 100% gonna catch him, which that has came back and bit me like at least twice this year I can think of, with Lee Livesey at Fork and Cliff Prince, who you mentioned at Palatka. If I'm super confident, there's not a percentage I won't go to. I'm more about spreading it out throughout the roster. You know, I don't like the entire roster being high percentage guys, even though, like I said, this week you're going to hear my picks and you're going to think that certainly doesn't check out to what he just said. But typically two guys, and as far as high percentage is concerned, I have no limit. I'll pick somebody for 99% if it's a pick that I'm confident is going to catch them.
Yeah, I kind of feel wronged. I feel peer pressured because, you know, Lee Livesey, I said that this doesn't line up to be his time of the year at Fork. And I just felt like in the minority, I needed to pick him because I've not picked him before and it's burned me. And so I was pressured into picking him and I would have been correct. But I think my replacement for his bucket didn't do much better. So I was at ease with it, at peace. But yeah, that, when you get around that 37, 30, you know, a third of the player base is picking that person in the bucket, you start to feel like there's going to be some value elsewhere and maybe a similar finish. And so let's get into our Rapala Bassmaster Fantasy Fishing team then, 1 through 5, A through E, however you want to classify it. Give me your five if you're ready. And outline the percentages when you say, you know, bucket A, angler, whatever percentage this.
Here comes the most chalk lineup Kyle Jesse has ever had in fantasy.
Wait. Let me try to guess your lineup. Hey, this is a new segment. Let me try to guess your lineup. Okay. If you're saying chalk, and don't tell me I'm wrong. Just tell me afterwards. Matt Airy in bucket A, Patrick Walters in bucket B, Jake Whitaker in bucket C, Brandon Cobb in bucket D, and bucket E. Maybe like Iaconelli. How close was I on the five?
You got three of the five correct.
Okay. Okay.
So, bucket A is indeed Matt Airey. Bucket B is indeed Patrick Walters. Bucket C is Shane LaHue.
Oh, that's right. LaHue and Whitaker are both in there. Yeah.
Even though on my in my column that I wrote for Bassmaster.com, Jake Whitaker was my backup pick. So that was, you know, 1A, 1B. Brandon Cobb, D, and David Mullins in E.
Okay.
So I feel like was a bucket where you could kind of toy around with some different people. Iaconelli is he's had great success at Lake Murray, so it's kind of hard to argue what he's done there. Was a very, very strong consideration to making my roster. But just to go over it one more time, bucket A, Matt Airey. Bucket B, Patrick Walters. Bucket C, Shane LaHue. Bucket D, Brandon Cobb. And bucket E, David Mullins.
I just got the email for Fantasy Fishing Columns from the Bassmaster newsletter as we're doing the podcast. So I might consult that before I make my picks. But so what is the percentage outline like? Aries at 11.
Oh, sorry. You did ask me to do that. Matt Airey, 11%. Patrick Walters, 34%. Shane LaHue, 18%, 18.4%. Brandon Cobb, 47.8%. Very high. And David Mullins, 4.4%. So this is one of the very few tournaments where I don't have somebody on my roster like sub 2%.
I think you actually, all your picks add up to 100%. 11 and 34 is 45. And then you got 18. So that's a 63. And then you've got 47. So that's 110. And then you got four. So you got 115% worth of picks. You should bust the lid off fantasy this week. I don't think my percentage is nearly as high, but I just made it more. Because here's my five. Okay. I got Wesley Gore, Patrick Walters, Jake Whitaker, Brandon Cobb, and Cole Sands. And Gore is at 0.2. We know 34 for Walters. We know 2% for Whitaker, 47 for Cobb, and 12 for Cole Sands. It was a whole lot less, but I can't break my rule. I don't know. Kyle, you have to consult me on this. I swore off picking Carl Jochumsen and Steve Kennedy because they were the sellouts for the big bait back in the day, and it would screw me in the best way possible or worst way possible of fantasy. It would just destroy my week. 85th or worse every time I picked those two guys. So I just stop tricking myself, because every time I pick them, they have a bad week. And they also probably told me, hey, Ronnie, stop picking us. Every time you pick us, it's a bad week. Pete Robbins did that. Every other week he picked Steve Kennedy, he was either picking him on the good trend or the bad trend. We swapped. So I had Steve Kennedy. But as we started the podcast, I was like, do I break my rule? So my question to you is, at what point can I welcome them back in? Like, how long do they have to stay off my team? What do they have to do? Carl's made his, you know, since I swore him off, he's made two classics. Kennedy hasn't, but like, when do I welcome him back? Can I welcome him back this week? Do I want to swap out Kennedy or swap in Kennedy for Walters? Like,
I think you can welcome him back now. I think the time is now.
So Wheeler going forward, I can do it.
Yeah, I'd say go for it. I think they've both proven it, you know, consistently enough here, you know, especially this year that, you know, I mean, Steve Kennedy, I mean, you think
he's
about the big,
baby, he's in the classic right now.
Yeah. I mean, you think about the big bait aspect of this.
I mean, swim baits. That's why I put him.
Who's not to say he's going to throw a big jointed glide bait or a big, you know, big something across a point and just,
he's probably got like three discontinued Bass Pro Shops line throughs that he's going to have winding across some points. God, do I pick him? No.
I think you do. Listen, I mean, Patrick Walters is coming off of two bad tournaments.
I know, but it's Murray.
I want to talk you out of it, so I pick him and you don't. I don't think Patrick Walters is not going to catch him. That's why he's on my team. But I'd be all in favor of you not picking him and me, you know, jumping over you in bucket B.
Like, I think Kennedy could get a top 10.
I agree.
I'm going to do it.
He's doing it.
I'm going to do it. Hold on. Ready? Kennedy. 1%. Got to do it. Man, that reminded me because Kennedy's right below Greg Hackney. When I told you I'm picking Greg Hackney at the Harris chain because he's bucket D and he's not going to be in bucket D forever. He is in bucket B now, fellas, after a top 10 at the St. John's as well. That Florida swing did Hackney a well a good top 13, top 10. He's now in bucket B, right where we expect him to be. I got him on value. You did not. Thank you very much. Let's move on to discuss why. We know why for Walters. We know why for Cobb. We know why for Whitaker. We know why for LeHue. And then
I mean, you know why for the
I just explained Kennedy, but I guess for Airy, for you, same principle. Because I got to explain Wesley Gore and Cole Sands, and you got to explain Mullins and Airy.
I would say with Matt Airy, it's the same thing. I've been pretty steady on Matt Airy, which that
was the guest of our last podcast. Voted one of the most underrated anglers in the Elite Series.
The last few tournaments, I've had him either on my roster, he's been my backup, and I've either switched off of him or whatever. But I've brought this up on the podcast a handful of times. The Eufaula tournament in 2020. I don't know why, but like his consistency, all the things Matt Airy has done, the same stuff we talked about on the podcast last week, are all true. And I really do value Matt Airy as a pick in fantasy fishing. But that tournament, anytime we get to a tournament where you feel like multiple things could play, you know, like I just think Matt Airy is so versatile, has been so consistent, and then has proven in multiple occasions that in tournaments where you can do multiple things, he knows how to balance that. You know, that 2020 Eufaula tournament, I bring it up all the time because he was fishing brush piles offshore
with a jig, and other things, and then caught him on a frog.
And then was catching him on the bank on a frog and, you know, flipping around up shallow in the same tournament. And like that's one of those qualities where I think being versatile, being able to adjust and knowing when to flip and flop and do certain things is invaluable in these style of tournaments. And then you combine that with the fact that he's obviously a Carolinian as well, familiar with these style of lakes. And has had success there. I just feel like Matt Airy is a really, really good pick in bucket A. And then David Mullins, I just think he's going to bounce back. You know, obviously in bucket E, largely due to having to leave a tournament. Obviously that played into being in bucket E, but has done well at Lake Murray. Had a solid finish there last year. You're just talking about offshore fishing in general. Obviously blueback herring set up differently than Tennessee River fish. There's a lot that you could argue against it, but I mean, I think David Mullins is just a really, really good post-spawn fisherman. And I think that he's good enough with his electronics. Like he could easily figure something out. And, at a lower player percentage, I felt like I had to pick somebody that wasn't, north of 10%. So, David Mullins was my pick in bucket E.
Are you, was it like Lake Fork or something? He had a bad day one. But then he had a family deal on day two or something. He left, or are you talking about the Florida swing? Something happened because I wasn't.
That's what you got it.
I think nailed. Yeah. Okay. He only fished half the tournament.
Tournament is yes. So I didn't want to get too specific one because I couldn't really remember.
It had to be Fork because I think that, you know, you can't do that on the first event of a back to back and be able to make it back in time. Like I think that had to be the second leg.
I'm pretty sure you're right, but yeah. Obviously had to leave for family matters, and you know obviously that never helps your season. Of course.
Bob Downey's in bucket E for that same reason, but otherwise, and Bob's beating like 24 people, and he's only fished 3 Elite Series events. So all right, let's go to I'll explain Wesley Gore. I think you know these aren't spotted bass; they're largemouth, but the way spots feed and are aggressive, and the way they operate. A guy from the Coosa, Alabama River, like that region, maybe even a Smith Lake, like knowing how spotted bass activate and operate. I think that Wesley will do well this week. He's going to have a bounce back week as well. After I think he survived Rodman and made day 3 at St. John's, but he did not do good at the Harris chain where he did well in the open last fall. So I think that was a little shock, and I think he's going to bounce back this go around. Let's get to Falcon Rods Drain the Lake. All right. I was doing better in Rapala fantasy fishing than I was in Falcon Rods Drain the Lake. Not the case anymore. I'm at 84%, 83 and change for Rapala, and I'm at 88.2 for Falcon Rods Drain the Lake. So Drain the Lake still going steady. I feel like that's going to be a consistent one for me. And I got a pretty dang stacked lineup this week. I think I saved guys and projected them out very well. So I'll start us off. I'm going to give you my first four. Any of the ones that duplicate from my five-man lineup, I'll put in my first four just because they don't need an explanation. So Brandon Cobb, Jake Whitaker, Jordan Lee, and Scott Martin. So obviously Cobb and Whitaker duplicate. Jordan Lee and Scott Martin are two others in my first four.
So my first four, I only have three duplicates across my entire roster. But to start out, I've got Brandon Cobb, Shane LaHue, Patrick Walters, and I'm giving Brian New a second chance. Brian New is on the Drain the Lake roster.
Nice. I think I saved Walters. I think Walters was a Toledo for me. Yes, Toledo. So I got a second place out of Walters. So if I was scared to not put Walters on my Murray team, but I knew if I put him somewhere, he had to get a top five because that's probably what he's capable of at Murray. So I'm glad I already used him and he got second. My other four would be Jacob Poroznik, Jason Williamson, Brian New, and Mike Iaconelli.
To round out my roster, I have Austin Felix, Jake Whitaker, Matt Robertson, and Todd Auden.
Okay. Just the cliff notes. We've already talked about Cobb. We've talked about Whitaker. We've talked about Brian New a little bit, especially on his style of fishing now being a full year local to this place, fishing it quite a bit, being comfortable there. Iaconelli's had great finishes there. We mentioned that. Williamson is one of the quietest Elite Series pros, but he is a winner at Clark's Hill. He's done very well at Murray. He is a blueback herring fisherman. He knows how to do that, whether it's with a shaky head or a fluke or other bait. Like he just, there's a couple key baits you got to keep in your rotation if you're a herring fisherman in the Carolinas. And Poroznik, I think that managing the not super offshore, but somewhat offshore game with the bank patterns that could be developing or the different spawns that are happening, I feel like Poroznik's one who's always kept good at catching really early spawners and really late spawners. Scott Martin, I feel like this is a moving and shaking place, and I feel like he's going to be able to do that well this year. And then Jordan Lee, I hadn't picked him all year. Obviously, Drain the Lake, I already set my lineup at the beginning of the season, but I kind of projected this one. It helps that he's second in points, but now I have pressure that he's done well in four of them. So is this the one he's going to finally slip up at? I don't think so. I think that his style of fishing, Smith being his home lake, Gunnersville being another lake that he would call home, there's not a ton of parallels, but that is offshore herring fishing and then a highly pressured fishing. Those are the two places he gets, and that's what you get at Murray. And so I think that, and also a guy being patient on point fishing, we've seen him do that plenty in his career.
I think the one thing that's surprising about the Jordan Lee pick is not saving him for Smith. Obviously, I
know that's just pick. That's a tough time to really know, you know.
It's a tough time to know, but also you could make the argument that it's a tough time for guys that
don't know
fishing it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm not saying Jordan Lee probably goes out of his way to fish Smith a lot in the June, you know, July, August months, but I would say he's definitely done it more than the majority of the field. So interesting pick. I think it could certainly work out. Jordan's obviously got some incredible momentum built up. So I dig it. I like the pick.
I think that he is actually going to be our Angler of the Year leader at the end of this week. There's my bold take of the week.
I can get down with that.
And Trey will probably still make a top 50. But I think to think that Trey's averaging like a 12th place finish or something, like he's only missed out on like 25 or 30 points over four events. He's missing out on 8 points per event, which means his average would be like eighth or ninth. I think is astounding that he still only has like a single digit lead over Jordan Lee. So.
We've been saying that since like the third event of the season, like Jordan Lee being as far down, you know, as far down as he was, like in the 10th or 9th or whatever he was just incredible based on how good his first two finishes were. When you looked at it and it's like, all these guys ahead of him are just like catching them like crazy.
Yeah, there's no way that it's sustainable for all of them. Some might sustain it, but not everybody can sustain that.
For sure, for sure. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, we've seen some moves and shakes, and I'm sure we'll see more of it this week at Lake Murray.
I used JT Tompkins at a great spot. He's done so well at the Harris Chain. He's spent so much time there. What's crazy is how much tangible time on the water JT Tompkins has at the Harris Chain that he doesn't have at Lake Murray, which is an hour and 15 minutes from his house in Myrtle Beach region. And I think he said he hadn't been at Murray like in a tournament or whatever in his boat, like, but just 3 days or something. So, or it was as a co-angler or something, like it wasn't. Yeah. So odd, but if you're wanting to pick a guy who's on a hot streak, that's more local, you would fall into that JT Tompkins trap. Not saying he's not going to do well, but just the nature of it says he's close by, but he doesn't have too much experience at Murray. Let's see what JT's ranked at. 8.8%. Not too crazy for being a South Carolina guy. Normally we load up on him. So, well, we had to do a quick one. Kyle's got to get some stuff done before heading out of town for Murray. And I am just tired as I'm just, we're just tired.
if you're watching the podcast and have seen me yawn about 98 times,
I've been burping up some sweet tea and trying to keep myself going as well. It's good. It's good. We got one more full week and then we get a little bit of a rest. I have a vacation scheduled for the week after Murray. So, I'm gonna be slamming that gear shift into sixth gear and we're going to just pound out the work this week so that next week everything's done. It can post and I can be with my girls. So Kyle, what's the winning weight? We didn't talk about that. Winning weight. I don't think it's going to be as high as it was last time, but I don't think it's hard to get less than 80 pounds. I think 84.10 is what I have.
For some reason, I think it's going to take less than 20 a day.
Really?
I don't know why. I just think that
this could be the most post-spawn funk lake there is, but I always feel like post-spawn funk is eliminated when you have herring spawn and shad spawn because these lakes, there's so much bait to eat, you know?
If it takes over 20, I think it'll take just over 20. I think somewhere between 70, mid-78 to like 81 and change. I don't know why. I think that there will be big bags. We'll see big bags. I think the fishing itself is going to be really fun to watch. There's going to be a lot of top water, a lot of fun ways
skinnier
to
fish. Yeah.
I just think that the inconsistencies of that. And then, you know, you mentioned the pressure and all the things that, you know, could potentially negatively affect it. Just makes me think it'll be somewhere around the 20 pound a day mark, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little lower. So that's
yeah, you're at 19 to 20 pounds and I'm at 21. So, when we break it down day by day, we're pretty close. It just sounds different when we're 4 pounds different, 5 pounds different on the productions. If we break it down hour by hour, we're pretty, we're even closer. So let's just minute by minute. How many pounds in the first? No, I'm just kidding. Kyle, I'll let you go for episode 177, the Inside Bassmaster podcast. Lake Murray preview, stop number 5. I think I always tell you all the lineup if you hang for the whole podcast. I think the day one lineup that we've came to a conclusion of for various reasons, Trey McKinney for being AOI leader. I think we'll have Cobb and Walters on there. We'll have Williamson as well. That's 4. And then we've got Benton as the defending champ and Kenta Kimura because he got a top 10 there. But Kenta's going to turn a season around here. We're not, he's kind of in the 30s or something, 40s in opens and like 60s, 70s in elites. That's not where he's going to turn it around this week. So looking forward to see that. Kyle, have fun on the water. We'll see you in studio at some point soon.